ॐ गणपतिमनन्दस्य जनजनसेवया चक्षुस्मृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन बुद्धये सायं रूपकदामयं वदति सपदति वंशकोपजुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैव च प्रतिष्ठिनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Yesterday we completed the sixth of the verses of the invocation of the Mangalacharan. And those first six verses spoke about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the purposes of his advent and other truths about him. Now, what I'd like to do is read the other eight verses up to 14. And then we'll move onwards yet backwards. So the seventh verse is so there are six verses about Mahaprabhu, then there'll be five verses about Nityananda. And then two verses about Advaita Charja and one about the Panchatattva. Hopefully that adds up to 14. So here is the first of the five verses about Nityananda Prabhu. May Sri Nityananda Ram be the object of my constant remembrance. Shankarshan, Sheshanag, and the Vishnus who lie in the Karana ocean, Garbha ocean, an ocean of milk, are his plenary portions and the portions of his plenary portions. Radharaman, do you have the next tape ready? In case that one goes out? Okay. So first thing that Kaviraj Goswami says about Nityananda is that he wishes to remember him constantly. And then he tells something of the potency and the position of Nityananda, because Shankarshan, Sheshanag, and the Vishnus, and the Vishnus are of three types: Karanadaksha Vishnu, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and Kiradaksha Vishnu. They are all expansions from him, or expansions of expansions from him. So they're called either plenary portions or portions of his plenary portions, and the portions of his plenary portions are also plenary or complete. So let that Lord Nityananda, who is so powerful, let him be the object of my constant remembrance, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says. Because when Nityananda Prabhu was going to act, and we'll hear some of his activities in Chaitanya Charitamrita and also in Chaitanya Bhagavat, he acts and sometimes very wildly. Sometimes he'll jump into the Ganga and swim as if he was a snake. Sometimes in ecstasy, he'll jump into the Ganga and grab a crocodile. Sometimes in ecstasy he'll throw off all his clothes. Sometimes he'll throw prasadam all over. Sometimes he'll fight with a Advaita Charja. So this is what it means when the Supreme Lord performs his pastimes, that they may appear to be like something of this world, and we try to understand his mentality by understanding our own mentality. If I were to be doing that, we enter with our finite consciousness, we enter into his mind, so to speak. We attempt to do that, well, and we try to think of what it must be like to be doing something like he's doing, and we come up with nothing what it is like for him to be doing what he's doing. We come up with what it's like if I was doing what he was doing, and me taking my particular finite mentality, which is contaminated and controlled by the material energy. So this concept is very important to understand, and we hear Prabhupada speak about this, how one needs study the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam before approaching the 10th canto. Why? Because otherwise we won't understand Krishna's activities in Vrindavan, and we won't understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's activities if we try to imagine and through our own intelligence and through our own experience what it is like to perform the activities that these personalities perform. So here it's so important we understand that whatever Nityananda Prabhu is going to do, we should understand his position. He is the one who is basically speaking the source of the universe, not only of one universe but unlimited universes, which are compared, the number of which are compared to the mustard seeds within a huge bag of mustard seeds. And you don't see them too much in Australia, but in India you see big burlap sacks of mustard seeds. The sacks perhaps are about like this big, and they're really fat, full of mustard seeds, and each mustard seed's about this big. What's that in, it's about an eighth of an inch, an inch is, what's it, if you're metric, what is it? Huh? Okay. Huh? Okay. So what's this?
2 mil.
Okay, 2 mils approximately. So it's so this personality, he's holding up even as one of his portions, Nityananda Prabhu, portions of his plenary portions as Ananta Shesha, he's holding up these universes upon his head, or they're lying on the causal ocean, and he's not even feeling any strain. And there's how many mustard seeds in one of those bags? Has anyone ever counted them? But there's too many, so many, so millions and millions, practically speaking, millions, countless, practically speaking. So this is Nityananda, who has come to this world to perform his pastimes. So we watch these pastimes, and they're not of the colossal magnitude of thousands and thousands of universes. But if one keeps that in his consciousness, that the same person who has the capacity to hold up or produce from his breathing millions of universes, he's dancing and chanting. This is still more wonderful than even his colossal pastimes, because he's doing that just out of his free will. Very wonderful. So Kaviraj Goswami continues, and again we'll discuss these later on. I surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Nityananda Ram. So first he says, may he be the constant object of my remembrance. And here he's saying, because he's so powerful, let me always remember him. And now let me surrender unto his feet. Because how could one surrender unto someone else unless one is sure of his power? There'll always be, because when one surrenders, one is giving up protecting oneself, or the concept that I'm my own protector. That is gotripte varanam tata. That is the essence of surrender, placing oneself under the protection of Krishna. So one must be convinced of the power of Nityananda before one surrenders unto him. So I surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, who is known as Shankarshan in the midst of the Chaturvyuha, consisting of these expansions of Nityananda or of Lord Balaram, who are on the level of Vaikuntha. Vasudev, Shankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha, and they also have a relationship with the material world as well. So he is known as Shankarshan in that, and Krishna is known as Vasudev. It doesn't explain it in the verse, but it's also true. He possesses full opulence and resides in Vaikuntha Loka, far beyond the material creation. 9, the third verse about Nityananda. I offer my full obeisances unto the feet of Nityananda Ram, whose partial representation is called Karanadaksha Vishnu. So these verses are expansions of that first verse. Text 7, where he says, because this is a way to constantly remember Nityananda's, remember his position. Shankarshan, Shesha Naga, and the Vishnus, Karanadaksha Vishnu, Gaurabhadaksha Vishnu, and Kiradaksha Vishnu, are all him. So Nityananda Ram, whose partial representation called Karanadaksha Vishnu, lying on the Karana ocean, the causal ocean, called the causal ocean because it causes everything within the material world, he is the original Purusha, the master of the illusory energy and the shelter of all the universes. So this has to do with the creation. These texts have to do with the creation of the universe, and Nityananda Prabhu is the source of the creation of the universe in these different forms. So this is described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam in quite a lot of detail, in the 12th canto of the, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, and I think also in the 12th again, 11th or 12th. So this is Nityananda with just part of his energy. He's creating the universe and maintaining the universe. He is the, as the Karanadaksha Vishnu, he is the super soul or the Purusha or the super soul, who is the, just like our soul is the life of our body. So as Karanadaksha Vishnu, he is the life of the entirety of material existence. As Gaurabhadaksha Vishnu, he is the soul or the life of the universe, and as Chiradaksha Vishnu, he is the soul or the super soul. In all these cases, we can say super soul of every living entity. He's maintaining the life of every living entity as well as everything in existence. So this is just a part of Nityananda Prabhu's potency, and he comes and chants Hare Krishna with Mahaprabhu, giving full mercy. So he is the master of the illusory energy and the shelter of all the universes. Text 10. I offer my full obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, a partial part of whom is Gaurabhadaksha Vishnu. From the navel of Gaurabhadaksha Vishnu sprouts the lotus that is the birthplace of Brahma, the engineer of the universe. The stem of that lotus is the resting place of the multitude of planets. So in the Vedic cosmology, all the planets, all the 14 or 3 planetary systems, that the planets are divided into upper, middle, or lower, or sometimes into 14 different categories. All of these are within the stem of the lotus upon which Lord Brahma is sitting in his topmost planet within the universe of Satyaloka or Brahmaloka. 11. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, whose secondary part is the Vishnu lying in the ocean of milk. That means within the universe. This is an expansion of the expansion of the expansion of the expansion of the expansion of Nityananda. So that Chiradaksha Vishnu is the super soul of all living entities and the maintainer of all the universe. Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, with just an Angsa, a part of my energy, I'm maintaining everything. So this is Kiradaksha Vishnu. Shesha Naga is his further subpart, who is holding up the hoods. So those are the 5 verses about Nityananda, and 2 now about Advaita Charja. Lord Advaita Charja is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Because he is none different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita, because Advaita means none different. There's Dvaita, which means different, and Advaita means none different. So he is called Advaita because he is none different from the Supreme Lord, and he's also, yes. And because he propagates the cult of devotion, he's called Acharya. Acharya means teacher. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. And now in the final verse in this section, I offer my obeisances. Pancha tattvamakam krishnam bhakta rupa sarupakam bhaktya vataram bhaktya kam namami bhakta shakti kam. I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Krishna. This is the pancha tattva, who is non different from his features as a devotee, devotional incarnation, devotional manifestation, pure devotee, and devotional energy. So that's also a very esoteric verse, quite similar to the first verse. So this invocation of 14 verses ends in quite a similar way to the way that it began. And we'll speak about this. This is the Pancha Tattva. None different. The Supreme Lord Krishna, who is none different from his features as a devotee. So Krishna and his devotee are the same. And Krishna and his incarnation is the same. And his manifestation is the same. Expansion and incarnation. And he's none different from his pure devotee, and he's none different from his devotional energy. So these are all the Pancha Tattva. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adigor. All the rest too. Bhaktivinoda. So this will be explained. So in the first, we'll just quickly go over what the remainder of this chapter is. So the first 14 verses are these verses of invocation. And then from 15 to 31, he offers obeisances. Kaviraj Goswami offers his obeisances to different personalities. And then he begins to explain the first verse and then the second verse. And then in the second chapter, he will begin explaining the third verse. So now, what I would like to do, before we go start explaining these verses by reading the different chapters, very, very interesting to read Prabhupada's introduction. It's the reason why it, or one of the reasons why it's interesting, is because we're talking about the most esoteric of subject matters. Everything from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and him being Radha and Krishna, or Krishna in the mood of Radharani and engaging in loving pastimes, and this being the highest of all realizations, and Krishna not being able to understand certain things, and therefore he chooses to come as Srimati Radharani, the Supreme Absolute Truth, not able to understand certain things. So he comes, he adopts the mood and the luster of Srimati Radharani. So very, very esoteric subject matters. The Absolute Truth, first of all, being a person, and then not understanding something, and then not being the kind of person who is an old man with a beard, but being a very, very beautiful, most beautiful person, and him having a girlfriend, and then him not being able to understand her devotion, three aspects, and him coming, very difficult. And then we start hearing about Nityananda in five verses, and that he's the origin of Karanadakshai Vishnu, who is this huge forearm form that universes, unlimited universes are coming from. And then Garbhadakshai Vishnu, he enters into that. And from his navel, this is God, from his navel, a lotus flower comes, and in that lotus are all the planets and the universes, and on top of that is sitting Lord Brahma. And how does anyone remember how Prabhupada described Lord Brahma in that verse? Does anyone remember? Yeah, that he's the chief engineer of the universe. So that's something we can relate to. And there, he's an engineer. He's organized things and supervised the construction of the universe. And then Advaita Charja, who is none different, but he's also a devotee, none different from Lord Hari, and he's also a preacher. And then the Panchatattva, the absolute truth and five features. So this is very esoteric, very difficult to understand subject matter. We simply don't have the conceptual ability in the beginning to penetrate into this. So remember in this introduction that here Prabhupada this introduction, interestingly enough, is spoken in April 1967. It was five lectures that Prabhupada gave on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it was probably around the time when he was 67, when he was writing the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So his mind was right on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So here's Prabhupada. And this introduction is an introduction to it's his lectures. These five lectures are on the first 30 verses up to the point of obeisances before he begins to before Kaviraj Goswami begins to give his explanation on the first two verses. So Prabhupada's this introduction of these five lectures is his explaining to these very young, adventurous hippies the most esoteric, difficult subject matter that they have no conceptual ability to understand. They've been chanting Hare Krishna for perhaps a year at most, maybe a little bit more, no? A year, and a few of them, two of them perhaps have been to India and done who knows what while they were in India, and chanting Hare Krishna, they wear robes, they shave their head, but really no one understands anything. And here Prabhupada is going to explain about Chaitanya Charitamrita, about who is Mahaprabhu, who is Srimati Radha, because before understanding who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, you have to understand Radha and Krishna. And then he's going to explain Nityananda Prabhu. He's going to go over the verses one by one until he gets to the 14th verse, and then he's going to one by one basically explain the obeisances that Kaviraj Goswami is offering that we haven't read yet. But at least we'll read his Prabhupada's introduction here to these 14 verses, and let's listen to how Prabhupada explains it to those who don't really understand anything. So first, as one might guess, he begins by explaining the meaning of the book's title, because we forget about that, but after all, it is in Sanskrit, and here we are, and no one speaks Sanskrit, and everyone speaks English, what to speak of at that time, and no one knew any of the words, no one knew any verses, no one was really familiar with it, although Prabhupada did very early start to teach the devotees Sanskrit because of the interest of one of the aspiring devotees, Carl. But he's going to explain, first of all, what this book means, the title. Because we say, oh, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Hare Krishna, Maha Mantra. We carry on our conversations. And if someone who isn't a member of our circle listens to us, we forget that they can't understand what in the world we're talking about, because there's Sanskrit words everywhere. So here Prabhupada is going to first for the first page in this book. I don't know what it is in other books. For the first page and a little bit more, he's going to explain the meaning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. The word Chaitanya means living force. Charita means character. And Amrita means immortal. So living force, character, immortal. As living entities, we can move, but a table cannot because it does not possess living force. Movement and activity may be considered signs or symptoms of the living force. Indeed, it may be said that there can be no activity without the living force. Clearly, the difference between a dead body and a living body is the possession or non-possession of the living force, the soul, because there's clearly no activity in a dead body. There's no soul. So there can be no activity without the living force. Although the living force is present in the material condition, and we all experience that, this condition is not amrit. Mrita means death. Amrita means deathless or immortal. So we have experience of the living force within the material condition. But this condition is not immortal. The words Chaitanya Charitamrita then may be translated as the character of the living force in immortality. So this we should understand. This book is going to teach us something beyond matter, beyond our experience, because all our experiences are limited to the living force's activities within the realm of matter. But this is going to teach us Chaitanya Charita Amrita, the activities of the living force, or the character of the living force in immortality, in eternity, in the eternal realm. Quite wonderful. What a wonderful beginning. Very intriguing. Next question. There's a question immediately, but how is this living force displayed immortally? It is not displayed by man or any other creature in this material universe, for none of us are immortal in these bodies. We possess the living force, we perform activities, and we are immortal by our nature and constitution, but the material condition in which we have been put does not allow our immortality to be displayed. Does that make you think? So Prabhupada is really, he's giving something that's so thought-provoking. We cannot display the actual, eternal, immortal aspect of our true selves within the material tabernacle, within the material cage. It is stated in the Katha Upanishad that eternality and the living force belong both to ourselves and God. So immediately, some new information that immortality and the living force belong both to us, souls, and God. Now, at this particular time when Prabhupada was speaking this, what was popular in the subculture was to be thinking that we're all God. So Prabhupada is immediately going to address that. Yes, it's true that we are eternal and God is eternal. It is true, yes, that there is a living, that we have a living force, and God also has that. Although this is true in that both God and ourselves are immortal, there is a difference. As living entities, we perform activities, but we have a tendency to fall down into material nature. God has no such tendency. Being all powerful, He never comes under the control of material nature. Indeed, material nature is but one display of his inconceivable energies. We are so caught by Maya. We are so caught by the illusory energy. Just try to control your mind. Just try to be what you want to be. It doesn't work. We are like puppets with the strings being pulled by Maya, the three modes of material nature, forcing us, whipping us, pushing us up, pushing us down, forcing our desires, pushing, pulling, dictating our activities on the mental, subtle, and gross level. But Krishna is beyond the illusory energy. He can never come under its control in the same way that a king is not under the control of the prison house, even when he is visiting that prison house. He may appear to be in the prison. Indeed, he is in the prison in one sense, but he's not in the prison in the same way that the prisoners are in the prison. He's going to leave as soon as he gets hungry. He's not going to eat the prison food. All the prisoners are stuck. The bars inhibit and stop their leaving, even though they want to. So being all-powerful, he never comes under the control of material nature. Indeed, material nature is but one of the play, one display of his inconceivable energies. So this Maya that so easily, effortlessly controls us, forces us to become old, forces us to become diseased, forces us to die, forces us to take another birth, cycling again and again. This material nature is just one of Krishna's shaktis, his energies. So we're getting a glimpse of who God is, a small glimpse, not an intimate glimpse, but at least it's enough of a glimpse to understand that I am not God. An analogy will help us understand the distinction between ourselves and God. From the ground, we may see only clouds in the sky. But if we fly above the clouds, we can see the sun shining. So this is April 67. I think 1967, at some month, Prabhupada flew for the first time to San Francisco. And he, of course, when he came to the United States, he came by boat. So I don't know if he had flown yet. I think not. I think it was in just another month, and he was going to see this, have this experience. But if we fly above the clouds, we can see the sun shining. From the sky, skyscrapers and cities seem very tiny. Similarly, from God's position, this entire material creation is insignificant. The tendency of the living entity is to come down from the heights where everything can be seen in perspective. God, however, does not have this tendency. The Supreme Lord is not subject to fall down into illusion, Maya, any more than the sun is subject to fall beneath the clouds. Impersonalist philosophers, Mayavadis, what is the philosophy of an impersonalist, the Mayavadis? One who says that we are God, but have forgotten, covered by illusion. The Prabhupada is immediately, practically the first thing he's doing, is saying we are not God. We can never become God. We can, because God can never fall under illusion. He's fighting with the Mayavadis immediately, defeating them. The impersonalist philosophers, Mayavadis, maintain that both the living entity and God himself are under the control of Maya when they come into this material world. That is the fallacy of their philosophy. Back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should therefore not be considered one of us. He is Krishna himself, the supreme living entity, and as such he never comes under the cloud of Maya. First thing we have to know about Mahaprabhu, he is Krishna. because we're going to hear, not until the end of this canto, end of this lila, the Adi Lila, we'll start hearing the activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they are not ordinary, they are extraordinary. Just like when Nityananda Prabhu is jumping in the Ganga, we have to keep in mind that he is the creator of universes. Unlimited universe with just a portion of his portion. Otherwise we'll think that he's ordinary, but he's extraordinary. So he never comes under the cloud of Maya. The other example is the king, again, in the prison house. He's not under the order of the prison. He is the controller of the prison. So he never comes under the cloud of Maya. Krishna's expansions and even his higher devotees never fall into the clutches of illusion. Lord Chaitanya came to earth, because then you ask, well, why, if he's not under Maya, he's not forced to come to earth, why did he come to earth? He came to earth simply to preach Krishna Bhakti, love of Krishna. In other words, he is Lord Krishna himself, teaching the living entities the proper way to approach Krishna. So therefore, when we observe the activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are two things that we are watching in one sense. One is that he is the Supreme Lord, and internally relishing something that's very the most wonderful thing. But also we're watching how he is teaching us. And he's teaching us by his example how we can develop the love of God that is causing him the highest ecstasy. So he's teaching the living entities the proper way to approach Krishna. So we watch that very carefully. He is like a teacher who, seeing a student doing poorly, takes up a pencil and writes, saying, "Do it like this, A, B, C." From this, one should not foolishly think that the teacher is learning his ABCs. Similarly, although Lord Chaitanya appeared in the guise of a devotee, we should not foolishly think he is an ordinary human being. We should always remember that Lord Chaitanya is God, Krishna, Krishna God, himself teaching us how to become Krishna conscious, and we must study him in that light. So many wonderful points are being made, practical, philosophical, logical, and shastric. Continuing. In the Bhagavad Gita 18:66, Lord Krishna says, "Give up all your nonsense and surrender to me. I will protect you." So this is, Prabhupada's established, we are not God, but rather Krishna is God. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, and he's come. And he's not in this world like we're in this world, but he's come to teach us how to attain bhakti by his own example. Now Prabhupada is making a next topic. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Give up your nonsense and surrender to me, I will protect you." And we say, "Oh, surrender, but I have so many responsibilities." And Maya illusion says to us, "Don't do it, or you'll be out of my clutches. Just stay in my clutches and I'll kick you." Another word for Maya in this case is the mind. It is a fact that we are constantly being kicked by Maya, just as the male ass is kicked in the face by the she-ass when he comes for sex. Similarly, cats and dogs are always fighting and whining when they have sex. Even an elephant in the jungle is caught by the use of a trained she-elephant who leads him into a pit. We should learn by observing these tricks of nature. Maya has many ways to entrap us, and her strongest shackle is the female. Of course, in actuality, we are neither male nor female. For these designations refer only to the outer dress, the body. We are all actually Krishna's servants. But in conditional life, We are shackled by iron chains in the form of beautiful women. Thus, every male is bound by sex, and therefore one who wishes to gain liberation from the material clutches must first learn to control the sex urge. Unrestricted sex puts one fully in the clutches of illusion. So, 2 points I would like to make here. One is that in Kapila Muni's teachings, it's in the fourth canto. This one works both ways, obviously. Not fully. He explained in the fourth canto, probably in the Prachini Bharishat, the story of Paranjana, or after that in the explanations, probably, but I'm not really sure. That Prabhupada is speaking this from the perspective of a male and what traps a male, thinking that I am the enjoyer, and that is what sex life fixes one in the consciousness of I am enjoying, I am meant to enjoy. Another way to phrase it is exploit. I will exploit this body for my pleasure, mine and the other person. So for a male, female, who traps one into the enjoying mood, and for the female, it is male. Each person trying to exploit or enjoy the material world, but the more one tries to enjoy the material world under the influence of Maya, the more one suffers, getting kicked in the face. So Prabhupada then says, if one wants to get out of the shackles of Maya, one has to control the sex urge. No unrestricted sex, because that fully puts one under the clutches of illusion. So the first point was male, female, female, male. Second point is, look what Prabhupada is saying right in the beginning. First thing he criticizes is the impersonalists and all the people in the room, all the young hippies. But of course this is the morning class, so the more serious ones are present, the ones who are actually looking to Prabhupada for deep spiritual guidance. First thing he criticizes is a keystone of their philosophy, that we are all God, and the second is the second keystone of the philosophy of the hippies of the 60s generation, is to make love, not war, just enjoy. It's like in those days it was like thinking that you had come to a new realization that no one had ever understood before, and it was called sex life. No one had understood anything about it before. That was the mood. It was invented in the 60s or something. So the first thing Prabhupada says here is that the Krishna consciousness and this do not go together. If you want that, you stay in the material world. And if you want to get free from the kickings and the sufferings of the material world, one has to give it up. So Prabhupada, and this is a characteristic of that we see with Prabhupada, how to put it, so many ways to put it. He didn't compromise. He spoke so upfront. He didn't care about being politically correct. He went for the heart of the matter. These are the two hearts of material illusion, that we are all God and that I'm meant to enjoy. So right in the beginning Prabhupada's speaking about this. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu officially renounced this illusion at the age of 24, although his wife was 16 and his mother 70, and he was the only male in the family. Although he was a Brahmin and was not rich, he took sannyas, the renounced order of life, and thus extricated himself from family entanglement. If we wish to become fully Krishna conscious, we have to give up the shackles of Maya. Or if we remain with Maya, we should live in such a way that we will not be subject to illusion, as did the many householders amongst Lord Chaitanya's closest devotees. So here, Prabhupada is putting it into the practical perspective that it's not required that one not be married, be a sannyasi, as Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi, but rather one has to give up the concept that I am the enjoyer. Whether one is married or not married, Prabhupada is going to say, one should live in such a way that one will not be subject to illusion. And he's giving the example, as did the many householders amongst Lord Chaitanya's closest devotees. With his followers in the renounced order, however, Lord Chaitanya was very strict, even banished Junya Haridas, an important kirtan leader, for glancing lustfully at a woman. So this is going to be described later in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's a very, very heavy pastime. Very heavy pastime. Mahaprabhu became so strict, and it appears from the description that it wasn't, he was very innocent even, this Chota Haridas, but Mahaprabhu, he wanted to teach something, and he taught it very sternly. The Lord told him, you are living with me in the renounced order, and yet you are looking at a woman with lust? Other devotees of the Lord had appealed to him to forgive Haridas, but he replied, all of you can forgive him and live with him. I shall live alone. On the other hand, when the Lord learned that the wife of one of his householder devotees was pregnant, he asked that the baby be given a certain auspicious name. Which name was that? Puridas. And Sivananda Sen named him Paramananda, because there was Paramananda Puri, who was one of Mahaprabhu's intimate associates in Jagannath Puri. And who was, what's another name for this Puridas? Who did he become? Kavi Kanapur. And he gave him the auspicious name, and he ended up, Mahaprabhu let him suck his toe at one point and gain that nectar, and then he became the greatest of writers, the most wonderful writer, who wrote the Ananda Bhandaram Champu and Khan something. Yes. So while the Lord approved of householders having regulated sex, he was like a thunderbolt with those in the renounced order who tried to cheat by the method known as drinking water underwater while bathing on a fast day. In other words, he tolerated no hypocrisy among his followers. What is the method known as drinking water underwater while bathing on a fast day? On a fast day, I remember this was, we used to use this example a lot. Oh, I'm not eating anything. I'm not drinking anything. I'm so pure. I'm so advanced. And then, while bathing in the river, when you're bathing underwater and no one can see, that's what it means. Did you know that? Did you ever hear that before? No. That's what it means. Did you know that?
I remember probably used that too.
Yeah, that's what it means. So it's cheating. Oh, I am a great faster. And then when underwater, when no one's looking. In other words, he tolerated no hypocrisy among his followers. So very strong preaching. From the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we learn how Lord Chaitanya taught people to break the shackles of Maya and become immortal. Thus, so going back to the directly to the meaning of the title, Chaitanya Charitamrita, thus as mentioned above, the title may be properly translated the character of the living force in immortality. The supreme living force is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is also the supreme entity. There are innumerable living entities, and all of them are individuals. This is very easy to understand. We are all individuals in our thoughts and desires, and the Supreme Lord is also an individual person. So now he's moving forward to this. Because he's going to start describing these verses. So we are individuals, And the Lord is also an individual. He's a person. Because even if someone thinks that the Supreme, that God is a person, it's very hard for anyone to accept that He actually has personality and characteristics, likes and dislikes. Because as soon as, even if amongst persons, as soon as you say, well, Krishna likes to, his skin is darkish blue, and he likes peacock feathers, and to herd cows, so he plays the flute. Someone will say, well, why doesn't he play the trombone? Why doesn't he like goats? I like goats. Why doesn't he have red skin? Why doesn't he like crow's feathers and ostrich plumes? Because as soon as you get specific, and persons are always specific, very hard to get people to accept it. So Prabhupada is going for this, and we have to understand this. And this, therefore the authoritativeness of Shastra will have to be accepted to understand the actual characteristics of the Lord. But he's confronting things directly. So the Lord is also an individual person. He is different, though, than the living entity, in that he is the leader, the one who can excel. Amongst the minute living entities, one being can excel another one in capacity, in one capacity or another. Like each of these living entities, the Lord is an individual, but he is different in that he is the supreme individual. God is also infallible, and thus in the Bhagavad Gita he is addressed as Achyuta, which means he who never falls down. This name is appropriate because in the Bhagavad Gita Arjuna falls into illusion, but Krishna does not. Krishna himself reveals his infallibility when he says to Arjuna, when I appear in this world, I do so by my own internal potency. So he's not falling into this world, forced into this world. He's coming by his own will, by his own desire, sambhavam yapmamaya, by his own mercy. Thus, we should not think that Krishna is overpowered by the material potency when he comes into the material world. Neither Krishna nor his incarnations ever come under the control of material nature. They are totally free. Indeed, in Srimad Bhagavatam, one who has a godly nature is actually defined as one who is not affected by the modes of material nature, although in material nature. Even if a devotee can attain this freedom, then what to speak of the Supreme Lord? So Prabhupada is moving it forward to describe how the Lord comes to this world, because Lord Chaitanya comes to this world for his own purposes, to teach bhakti. He's not forced. He's an individual. He's a person. He has characteristics. He has personalities. He has attributes, quite specific and individual. He thinks, but he's not under the control of the modes of material nature. So we'll just read the next two paragraphs, and that will bring us to the point where Prabhupada will begin to discuss the first of the verses. Remember, this is how he's decided to introduce Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and these very esoteric points. Now, here's a question. He comes up with a question. The real question is, how can we, because Krishna, by definition, is unpolluted by matter. He's the Lord. But how can we remain unpolluted by material contamination while in the material world? Now, that is the question, isn't it? He can, like the sun, doesn't fall below the clouds, but we are below the clouds. How can we be above the clouds, even though we're on ground level? Srila Rupa Goswami explains that we can remain uncontaminated while in the world, if we simply make it our ambition to serve Krishna. One may then justifiably ask, how can I serve? It is not simply a matter of meditation, which is just an activity of the mind, but of performing practical work for Krishna. In such work, we should leave no resource unused. Whatever is there, whatever we have, should be used for Krishna. We can use everything: typewriters, automobiles, airplanes, missiles. If we simply speak to people about Krishna consciousness, we are also rendering service. Don't get caught on missiles only. But also we can speak to Krishna. We are also rendering service. But the point is that we should serve. And if our motive is pure, then everything can be used or not used in Krishna's service, depending upon how Krishna wants one to serve. If our mind, senses, speech, money, and energies are thus engaged in the service of Krishna, then we are no longer in the material nature. But purity, although utility is the principle, using everything in Krishna's service, purity is the force. And if there is no purity, then we should be very careful in how we deal with these, we should be very careful how we deal with these items to make sure that the purity is there. By virtue of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, we transcend the platform of material nature. It is a fact that Krishna, his expansions, and his devotees, that is, those who work for him, are not in material nature, although people with a poor fund of knowledge think that they are. The Chaitanya Charitamrita teaches that the spirit soul is immortal, and that our activities in the spiritual world are also immortal. The Mayavadis, who hold the view that the Absolute is impersonal and formless, contend that a realized soul has no need to talk. But the Vaishnavas, devotees of Krishna, contend that when one reaches the stage of realization, he really begins to talk. Previously, we only talked of nonsense, the Vaishnava says. Now let us begin our real talks of Krishna. In support of their view that the self-realized remains silent, the Mayavadis are fond of using the example of the water pot, maintaining that when a pot is not filled with water, it makes a sound, but that when it is filled, it makes no sound. But are we water pots? How can we be compared to them? A good analogy utilizes as many similarities between two objects as possible. A water pot is not an active living force, but we are. Ever silent meditation may be adequate for a water pot, but not for us. Because this was another one of the issues, that spiritual life and meditation, this was beginning to become popular in the 60s. But people's conception of spiritual life was this: he who knows does not speak, he who speaks does not know. This was a typical type of thing in spiritual life. Meditation on what? Meditation on the formless, the impersonal, the void. This was really, now, huh? What was that something within? Yeah. I used to have this when the transcendental meditation was popular then. So the so-called Maharishi, who's doing very well now. As with so many things. But he I used to have. I got it from the Port Royal Library in Kitinagar. There was an early record of the Maharishi speaking and explaining how to meditate and relax your mind and make it, as the rivers are flowing. And it was. You had to laugh when you heard it, because you couldn't follow what in the world he was talking about, actually. But that was the concept, and And we were such believers in the 60s. We were believers in what? I remember telling Rupa Nuga one of the first classes that when he was criticizing transcendental meditation, one of the first classes that I went to in the 60s, by Krishna consciousness, said, I can't believe that the Beatles are wrong, that they could be cheated or fooled or anything. How is that possible? So what? This is what Prabhupada had to contend with. You know, people like me. and to try to convince that this is, that spiritual life isn't this conception of complete withdrawal that no one can do anyway. That's a kind of spiritual life, that's jnana yoga. But no one can do that, but that's not the ultimate in spiritual life either. So ever silent meditation, so these are issues, and this is why they're being brought up here, but they're still so relevant today. If you, you know, the whole New Age circuit is just filled with each and every one of these points. You know, the Prabhupada's strongly making, say, 3 points. The first is we're not God. God is, and that everything isn't God. Second point is that if you engage in sex life, you can't really transcend. You can't transcend. And the third point is, what is spiritual life? It's actively using everything in service. So these are completely relevant. You know, if you called everyone in the New Age circuit together and you said these 3 things within 15 minutes or 10 minutes, but as long as it took you to get out all 3 of them from your mouth, you would have an empty room. This isn't what they want to hear. They want to hear everything is illusion, so therefore I can do anything I want. Of course, it's not really real anyway. It's just illusion. It's just silly Mayavad philosophy that's contaminated. Remember we were talking in Hong Kong to the youngest of the Hari Leelas, and there he was preaching to us about, you know, spirit, we're all souls, you know, everything is whatever, and there he was smoking a cigarette and saying, I'm not smoking, this is just my body smoking. Yeah. What's the problem? It doesn't have anything to do with me. This is my typical Mayavada philosophy, and this is what people want to believe, so that they can do whatever the heck they want to do and think that it's transcendental. So such cheating. So a good analogy utilizes similarity between as many similarities between two objects as possible. A water pot is not an active living force, but we are. Ever silent meditation may be adequate for a water pot, but not for us. Indeed, when a devotee realizes how much he has to say about Krishna, 24 hours a day are not sufficient. It is the fool who is celebrated as long as he does not speak. For when he breaks his silence, his lack of knowledge is exposed. The Chaitanya Charitamrita shows that there are many wonderful things to discover by glorifying the Supreme. So then Prabhupada will begin in the next 2 paragraphs, and we'll save this for tomorrow, Krishna willing. He's going to say something, explain text the first verse. So about the different aspects, obeisances to the different aspects of Krishna. So we'll hear what he says tomorrow. So this is Prabhupada's preparatory comments describing what the first chapter, or the half the first chapter, or a third of the first chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah. Anshita Kapitubhya's child.